I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, you're listening to James Sense. I am one of the hosts, probably the main host of Cinematic Universe. I'm the main guy, if anyone asks, that's me. So if you're wondering when the next news episode is coming, I thought I'd let you know that we are waiting until after D23 has happened, because basically there's not much news since SDCC, which we covered fairly extensively. Obviously Joe got his new baby, so his scheduling is tough anyway. So yeah, we're going to wait and try and get one out very quickly after D23, where there will be hopefully lots of Disney announcements we can talk about. And maybe Warner will have done something by then as well, who knows. So until then, you've got the spoiler-free Salmon episode that we released earlier this month to listen to. If you want to hear the second half of that, we've just published the spoiler-filled Sandman chat on our Patreon. And what you're about to hear now is a Patreon sample of our She-Hulk weekly episodes. So if you're watching She-Hulk, this is the kind of thing you can expect. Hopefully, Reese won't be as negative about it in future weeks. Maybe he didn't like it and you'll agree with him. Who knows? But if you want to listen to this kind of thing every week, we're doing it over on the Patreon for, I think, nine episodes for the low, low price of $3 a month. So go check it out. Patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. Give it a listen. See how you feel. We'll be back the second week of September for the next news episode. We will see you then. Welcome to another bonus episode of Cinematic Universe. I'm your host, James Hunt, and joining me is...
It's Reese Williamson, hello.
It's always Reese Williamson.
It's always Reese Williamson. It's all coming up, Reese! James, how are you? How are you on this fine
time? I am very good.
Lovely.
Especially for having seen the thing we're about to talk about, which is She-Hulk. She-Hulk episode one.
She-Hulk!
I'm intrigued to know how you found it.
We're just jumping straight in.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm. You liked it more than I did.
Okay. That's disappointing.
I've watched it twice now. I don't know. I'm just not. It basically just doesn't. It sort of does nothing for me, really. This first episode. And it doesn't sort of dissuade me any more than I was before for the rest of the season. I'm as excited at episode two than I was as at episode one. But I don't know. Just before we recorded, I said, "Oh, I've got a good idea for the show. Let me write it down. I'm not going to tell you, James. Off mic." And that idea was, I literally just watched the episode again, finished minutes ago. And the final needle drop is, "Who's that girl? Who's that girl? And I kind of think that's the problem with this first episode. Like, I think the gag there is, spoiler. I mean, of course, spoilers. The sort of episode ends with her hulking out in public for the first time, and in the law room, she changes back, and then who's that girl? Like, oh, everyone's going to want to know who is the new She-Hulk. Whereas actually, my read on the song is, I just don't know who this character is. I think this episode doesn't do a very good job of just laying out why we should find, this version of Jennifer Walters interesting and a worthy protagonist for a show. Now, I think what you're going to say is, well, to me, this is, I've always been a She-Hulk fan. I've read a lot of She-Hulk. I like She-Hulk. There are good She-Hulk comics. And this seems like the version of She-Hulk that's in the comics, and so therefore I'm interested. But I am not a She-Hulk fan. Well, no, you know, not a. I've read the odd stuff, but I haven't read the Burn Run, the Slot Run. I read the first trade of the who was the lawyer and comic book writer? What's that guy's name?
Charles Soule.
I read that run for his first trade of that, and I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of it, you know, and yeah, so I don't really have particular thoughts about the character of She-Hulk. And coming into this, I was eager to be, but I actually like Tatiana Maslany a fair bit. Mm-hmm. Although I think part of the problem I'm describing is that she, you know, because she sort of became a star through Orphan Black. What that meant, you know, and she's playing all these various, you know, many clones of different characters, and all of whom are fairly different to each other. And then she hasn't really, you know, sort of popped up on the map since. I think that there isn't really a sense of who she is as a performer. Mm-hmm. You know, what is she as a star, as a leading lady? And so therefore you're coming into this, and I just wanted that. And I just totally don't get a sense of who the Tatiana Maslany Jennifer Walters / She-Hulk is going to be and why she's interesting. And we can talk more about, I think the show is sort of throw some ideas at the wall in this episode, but for me, none of them particularly connect. And I probably could have done, I think they probably should have done the first two eps, you know?
I think that is fair that they should have done the first two episodes. However, I sort of disagree with the premise that we don't understand who the character is. Like, I think if this episode has a problem, it's that it's all character. And to be clear, I don't think that is a problem. I really enjoyed it. But I think it's basically just going, here is the character of She-Hulk. Here she is interacting with the one character you know. So we're not seeing her against anyone else, but what, you know, there's plenty we can understand about She-Hulk based on what we've seen in this episode. For example, she doesn't want to be a superhero. She likes her life as a lawyer, and yet, based on her life as a lawyer and that speech she gives at the start about the people with power having responsibility, she is put into a situation where she has to be a superhero and embraces it reluctantly, but definitively.
That makes me think this is
an interesting, you know, a different version of a superhero. Like all the other guys, Bruce Banner, Tony Stark, they're career superheroes now. And she's not. But I found that intriguing.
I reject these powers. I'm the literal, like, Joseph Walker, Joseph Conrad, right? The hero's journey, the rejection of the call. That's baked into, you know, post New Hope sort of blockbuster storytelling in some ways. And like, I'm sorry, but that beat is so embedded into superhero stories. And so that happening again, that is not interesting to me. Like, oh, she rejects her power. She just wants a normal life. Okay, I mean, you know, we've seen that, I'm afraid, and that doesn't interest me.
Which other superheroes have we seen it with in the Marvel Universe?
I mean, that's...
just off the top of your head.
Well, Spider-Man, that's his origin story, right?
I mean, not in the MCU, though.
But I think I see what you're digging around at, but you can't disagree with me that that is such a core tenet of superheroes.
Like, one of the reasons I like this is because it's doing a core superhero thing, whereas most of the Marvel Universe skips to, you know, Captain America is a superhero, and here he is being a superhero for 10 films. Whereas this is going, imagine if you tried to live your life with superpowers. Like, that's something we haven't seen. I enjoyed it for that reason, because I am a superhero fan.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the thing that spoke to me about this, is that it's doing that classic TV superhero setup, and I do think this did feel very TV-esque in a way that even WandaVision, which was sort of aping the TV format, I think She-Hulk was actually doing a TV show, like, straight up.
And we'll talk about it for listeners. I don't know which order you'll listen to this in, but we are tonight recording an episode on She-Hulk, and tomorrow night we will record an episode on The Sandman, including the bonus final episode. I just think this is not about Sandman, but I've just really engaged with how that show is truly, truly, truly so episodic, especially its first half. That whole, you know, She-Hulk is a TV show. I don't know. I mean, except that you barely get a premise from this first episode. You know, so if it's going to turn into a proper 30-minute sort of sitcom, and it's a case of the week, and how does she juggle her lawyering and her superheroing, which I think is probably what the show's going to be. That sounds fun. I'm into that. But this episode's barely set. You know, this episode is a pilot sort of premise, is a premise episode, and so you don't get a sense of what the show's going to be from this first episode.
Sure. The thing is, I'll tell you what I felt at the end of the episode was like, you know, at the end of Spider-Man No Way Home, when he's in his apartment and he hears the police scanner and he gets into his costume and he crawls out the window and off he goes, he's Spider-Man. And you're like, I want to see what happens next. Well, the thing about this is that was episode one. And so episode two, we get to see what happens next. So I'm very optimistic that we will see, you know, that lawyer show in more depth than this opening episode tells you. And I agree, this feels very much like a standalone origin story. But I loved it all the way through.
I kind of agree with all that. Not the like, I loved it, but I am excited for episode two. I'm hyped for the show, but there is another element to this first episode that for me didn't work and makes me probably a bit more worried about how much I'm going to enjoy the season, which is that, you know, this is a 30-minute show. Mm-hmm. I know with streamers and it's a bit more complicated these days, but broadly speaking, if your show is an hour long with or without ads, it's a drama, and if it's half an hour long with or without ads, it's a comedy. That's mm-hmm. the genre that is. It's dabbling around, and they've called this a sitcom. I've read that in reviews.
Yeah.
Now, if you were going to break down the word sitcom, what's the sit bit, James?
Situation.
And what's the com bit?
Comedy.
Interesting. Say comedy. Okay. I thought that the comedy in this episode, I didn't laugh. I honestly didn't laugh once. I laughed maybe at the post-credits gag that I've just watched for the first time just now. I thought that was quite funny. But I just didn't think any of the gags landed. And you know, and if it's a sitcom, you know, sitcoms traditionally you got sort of 3 to 5 core characters. They have personality traits that ping off directly off each other. And I remember I did a comedy writing and directing course many moons ago. And I remember just one of the things that stuck with me that the teacher said in a great sitcom, the character traits are so, like, they're so defined and they're so kind of, they're so in adversity to one another that, like, the Friends characters, you could just have any of the 6 of them in a room and one of the characters just asks a question to the room and you'll sort of know what all the other 5 would say and what the jokes would be. And they'd all be different. They'd all be 5 different jokes because that's what sitcom is. And, again, there's just none of that in this episode, and the sort of quote unquote banter between Bruce and She-Hulk, you know, there's no spikiness there. There was no, you know, it just wasn't funny. This was less funny than the Ms. Marvel first episode, and that was pitched to viewers as I think more of a drama, and so I'm worried about that.
Again, I could not disagree more. I think this is the funniest of any of the MCU TV shows immediately and by far.
What are the jokes? What are the jokes you like?
Just the character comedy of having, like, Bruce Banner being annoyed by his sort of, you know, irritating cousin who's not engaging with his advice and, you know, who isn't treating him with respect. Like, there are some moments that are just facial expressions where you can see how annoyed Bruce Banner is getting and how, like, he's really trying to keep a lid on his anger. Like, that is funny, especially for the character of the Hulk, who is, you know, predicated on controlling his anger.
Except that this is not a serious, you know, the Mark Ruffalo Hulk has not really been a serious character in almost his whole iteration in the MCU. So I don't know. I just don't think that that's a comedic sort of wall to bounce off of, because Ruffalo's Hulk is being goofy. He was in fucking space and, you know, being hilarious in Ragnarok, and that's the same character.
Yeah, but he's playing the straight man here. Like, that surely that makes sense to you, right?
Except straight men, it's, you know, once you bend the straight man, they are less straight. but that's going to be a subjective thing, and comedy super subjective, and I have lots of comedy opinions that lots of people share, and lots of comedy opinions people don't share. So that might be just a me thing, but again, I watched it twice. I honestly didn't laugh. I didn't laugh out loud once, and I didn't really find any of the comedy funny.
I laughed all the way through, and as soon as I finished, I wanted to watch it again. I was like, okay, that was so good. It was just exactly what I wanted out of the entire, basically everything in the show was perfectly pitched as far as I was concerned.
I am gloriously happy for you, my friend. Gloriously happy. I shan't yuck your yum. I embrace it, and I proclaim it to the heavens. I'm happy for you, but I did not feel the same.
It's interesting. This is where it'd be useful to have a third voice on the podcast.
Just because you would want a third voice that agrees with you, so you in the argument.
I think it makes it more easy to come to a consensus.
Because I do, you know, and we've talked about the, I know a lot of the comedy in the episode totally is just Bruce talking to Jen in Mexico on that, I don't know, it's an island or just on the coast or whatever. And I think that for me, some of the jokes, some of the punchlines don't land because of the CGI, there's not enough performance in the performance. And, you know, with comedy, I know you were saying earlier about it's an eye movement, it's a facial expression. You know, that's such a big part of you know, selling punchlines, because that's the comedy. It does need to be sold by the performer. And I don't have a problem visually with the She-Hulk design. I think she looks cool. I think, and you can totally see Maslany's face in her face, and you can, you know, I don't think it looks bad or cheap, which is some of the scuttlebutt, you know, when the first trailer hit here, I just didn't feel like, and I don't think you felt like that either.
No.
But, you know, what if they've polished up the look of it because of that reaction, but in doing so, they've sort of had to sand off some of the performative bits of what it looked like before. I don't know, but that's, you know, that wouldn't shock you, especially after all the recent sort of MCU, you know, VFX stories and the press these last few weeks. But that's another worry of mine, that I hope that when she is in CGI form, that Maslany, there's enough of the performance in there that she can sell the jokes.
I mean, this is another disagreement, because there was not a second of this where I thought, oh, the CGI is getting in the way, or the CGI looks bad. Like, just the whole time I was just going, I can't believe they're doing this on a TV budget. Like, I could see moments where they were doing things like, you know, having Hulk facing away from the camera while he spoke, so they didn't have to do the performance capture in his face, but like, not in a way that impacted the comedy or the character. Like, the focus was always on She-Hulk in that moment.
I think, you know, I'm trying to work backwards from not finding the jokes funny. So I'm sort of going,
yeah,
like,
sure.
Maybe if I saw the Tatiana Maslany with dots on her face selling the same joke, I laugh a little more than what we get. But obviously you can't prove a false something. You know, you can't count, that's a counterfactual. You'll never know what that looked like. So, but I agree with you. The episode looks expensive. All of the Hulk stuff in the middle, Banner Hulk looks as good in this episode as he's ever done. He looks great. He looks. Yeah. It's not like, oh, this is the TV version. This has cost, two thirds. And that's one of the that's always been one of the kind of promises of these MCU shows. That. And maybe we wish there was a bit more action or a bit more spectacle, but actually when they do that stuff, it's pretty on par with the movies.
Yeah.
In execution, it maybe, if not in production design.
I was going to say there are lots of moments in the previous shows where I've been like, this is just so cheap. Like thinking of things like Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier, where you can really feel the lack of money in the fight sequences, and they're always set in warehouses, and they always feel like a three take fight scene rather than spending weeks on them, understandably. But that's
not a CGI thing necessarily. That could be more in conception and in choreography and camera movements. It's not that, and obviously there'll be CGI in that, but it's.
Well, this is the thing. I sort of think being fully CGI gives them a bit more flexibility to to be movie quality,
to whip those VFX guys even harder. It's like no one else. There's no one. We don't have to get anybody else to do this. It's just you fucking guys. All right. Tonight we work until 2 a.m. Feige in there, like he takes off his cap and he puts on when he turns the baseball cap backwards. That's when he ain't playing no more. He's here to fuck you up.
So I'm just trying to think about aspects of the.
We can do the sort of go through the episode bit. It's only half an hour, so there's actually less to talk about. But there's we could do that if you wish.
Yeah. Okay. Let's sort of do that. So obviously there's the intro, which starts off, in the quote unquote present, where she's giving her, I would say, a fairly key speech about how she views the responsibility of citizens in society.
See, what's interesting is you referenced that idea earlier, and having watched it twice, I was totally switched off to what she was saying in the wider context, I think. So it's interesting that you have clocked that and I just haven't.
Interesting. I mean, it's literally the first thing the character says. So I sort of, when she was saying it, I was thinking like, oh, she's doing a version of the power responsibility speech. Like, is this pre superpowers or is this after? And obviously we find out that it's after.
I think my brain was just going like, oh, she's just doing a deposition prep or something. I did not connect it with her superhero powers. I just didn't.
Okay. Do you think that connection is there now that I've mentioned it, or
well, I can't really remember the details of the speech, but and also the case is, I know we're jumping ahead, but it's we don't really know what that case is at the end, and that's Jameela Jamil at the end, who we suspect is going to be in the She is going to be in the show more than that one scene,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, is she, is Jen defending the case that she's involved with? Is it a hero's thing? It doesn't seem like it is.
No.
But maybe Jameela Jamil has some link to the guy that's getting prosecuted, I presume, and comes to break him out, I guess.
Yeah. Although I think I'm not going to talk about future episode plot points.
You've only seen this one, right?
Yeah, no, but I know from watching the trailer and stuff, where this is going.
Sure, okay.
Yeah, so...
But I agree with you. Yes, so of course, if she is talking about... She is doing a great power, great responsibility-esque speech, yeah.
Yeah.
But then what's interesting is that in the context of the final scene, it's before she has actually made that choice for herself.
Yeah, well, this is what interests me, is that she gives that speech and it's at odds with the decision she has made previously to not let her superpowers define what she does. But obviously, when that happens, she's got no choice but to but to engage as a superhero. We get a little bit of...
Go on. Let me say something. James, like, he likes something. Let him talk. I actually liked, because her best friend, what's the actress's name? Is it Ginger Gonzago, I want to say?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I think it's, and obviously, I mean, she's going to be this, you know, she will be a core character for the series. Mm-hmm. And I actually did find it funny at the end when just, it was a performative thing, right? It was when she's telling Jen to Hulk out, and she's like, she's doing it like she's talking to her in like a quiet lift, you know, she's sort of whispering it, but it's like, there's all this melee and maelstrom smashing going on. Like, I just found that funny. I felt that felt like an observation about her and that their dynamic, and perhaps about you know, because this, you know, two dudes I'm about to dive into what this episode says about women. But you know, that's in the episode, and I do enjoy the scene where she's in the bathroom and they have that kind of, you know, that just instant bonding moment with those strangers to her. That was quite sweet. Mm-hmm. But I felt there was that same kind of idea at the end there, where, like, you know, this is, even though everything's going crazy, even though everything's kind of mad, these two women feel like they need to sort of speak in a coded way, you know, and not sort of be totally doing an obvious big thing, because we need to keep our guard up, and we're going to be more, you know, we've got more eyeballs on us than our male equivalent, et cetera, et cetera. I got all that just from the way she, just from how the you know, that performance choice. And I also thought it was funny.
good to hear. Glad to hear. So yeah, then after that intro scene, we get sort of introduced to She-Hulk's origin, which she sort of narrates to us as a flashback. And so the premise is she is with her cousin. They're just hanging out. And Mark Ruffalo has got a special thing on his arm, which means he can stay as Mark Ruffalo.
Well, you keep the scene a little cheaper. I guess two things. One, it would be very hard to animate Hulk in that car, right?
It's too big. Quite.
And two, obviously, he needs to be hurt in the crash to get the blood.
I mean, I think that is the reality. I've seen a couple of people say, like, oh, it's good that he was able to change back for that one scene. And I was like, well, by necessity.
The origin,
He needs to get hurt. So
I think I did miss in this sequence, like, all you get is a yes, that Bruce Banner. I don't know. I just missed. I think back to Ms. Marvel and the way they kind of talked about other MCU characters in that first episode, and it was with style and with humor and with, I don't know, there just wasn't any of that. It was like, oh, it's Bruce Banner's cousin, who you've never heard of, by the way, and who you know, who seemed to have a very, you know, almost a sibling dynamic, really, the two of them, but you've never heard of them, you've never heard of Bruce's family that gets referenced, and I don't know, that felt, I guess you've got to establish that they're related, sure, fine, but there wasn't enough. I don't think that relationship between the two of them, and I think you disagree with this, but it just didn't feel. It didn't feel real enough.
I agree that it's more sibling-like, which is unusual for cousins, but also, like, I don't know. I think they could and maybe will explain why they have that dynamic further down the line. I mean, this is the same in the comics, really, is that. Suddenly they're like, well, Bruce Banner's got a cousin and here they are hanging out. And you're like, wait, what? Since when?
But the MCU is smaller than, you know, I think, you know, a comic could be published tomorrow that is, the Hulk has a long lost brother. And it's like, okay, fine, that's just comics. The MCU is a smaller world, you know, than all of the Marvel comics. And so I just think you've just got to do these things with a bit more of an elegance than I think was done here, of just cousins. and then my other point is maybe the more important point, that all of the sort of family, all of the banter and the family references was like, it just felt quite first drafty, you know, like, you know, there were no specifics to, okay, but actually do I believe that these two actual people, you know, knew each other as children, that, you know, we're actual cousins and shared cousins. I just didn't see it on screen as these are two real cousins.
Again, we differ because I thought, especially, I agree the material was a little thin. I think what sells that relationship is the sort of natural interaction between the two of them, which is like, as you say, it's sibling like, so it's sort of familiar, but not like sexual in any way. It's just they are at ease with one another and open to one another in a way that sort of doesn't have any romantic aspect to it either. And I, you know, the relationship between the two of them, I thought, given that it drives most of the episode, I thought that was the thing that really sold it for me. I was like, if every episode of the show was just them two sparking off each other, I'd be very happy with that. But I want to talk about She-Hulk's origin.
Yeah,
because okay. This is quite a major change from the comics. I don't know how much you know about her origin on the page.
I thought it was not that different. I thought she gets Hulk's blood and she becomes a Hulk.
Well, so in the comics, she is targeted by the mob. And a hit goes out on her. I think a hit goes out on her. Definitely she is gunned down by the mob, I can say that for sure. And the only way to save her life is for Bruce Banner to give her a blood transfusion while she's unconscious. I found it interesting the way they changed that in this. So the interesting point for me in this is that what happens to her happens by accident. It's not something that is done to her. I feel like that's quite important in terms of giving her agency.
Yeah, for sure.
Like if she had woken up and, you know, basically one of the most sort of, I guess, cursed, one of the most cursed individuals on the planet was like, oh yeah, by the way, I just had to put my blood in you. You would be reasonably upset and justifiably concerned about what had happened to you. By framing it as an accident, which he tries to warn her against.
I think you've almost, like, she goes to save him, right? She climbs the car, and I think the camera work is trying to guide you for the fact that she almost crawls out to go straight to save him. So it's like it's a fully active choice. So it's a total flip of the comics origin. I just don't know that you could. I don't know with the politics of today. You just couldn't do that comics origin today. I don't think, and you shouldn't, and you wouldn't want to.
Indeed. So I thought that was a really smart way around some of the more poorly thought out version, like aspects of her origin story.
What do you make of the spaceship?
The spaceship, I feel like that's coming back.
Right, because did you hear where he says the spaceship's from?
Yeah, he mentioned that it's Sakaaran, and it's visibly Sakaaran in design as well.
So what are we, let's speculation corner for a sec, what could that possibly mean?
Well, he says it's a messenger craft, and they're trying to get a message to him. I can't speculate beyond that, because I don't know what business they might have on Sakaar, whether that's going to tie in with anything, who can say?
Well, here's a pitch. That I think that means we are going to meet, what was his name? Scar? No. What was the Hulk's son called?
Yeah, Scar.
Scar, son of Sakaar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of think that's what they're setting up.
I mean, that would be fun.
Because that's the big Planet Hulk thing. Well, no, I guess they didn't really do the Planet Hulk story, kind of, or they didn't do the World War Hulk story. But that's the big Planet Hulk thing that they just didn't even hint at in Ragnarok. But but you could absolutely, you know, that Thor, like, Hulk has been Hulk on that planet for a good period, and he could have, you know, made somebody pregnant with his
big old
Hulk dick. I could see that. I could see that.
That would be fun. That's a good theory.
Maybe not even in the series, right? That just could be there's a piece on the board here. We don't really think we're going to get Goldblum back to, you know, we're not going back to Sakaar, but let's do that comic story.
Yeah, I like it. I like that idea. I'd be very happy if they went that way, because I really love that entire run, the Planet Hulk run. So,
although it'd be funny if in the same year they gave Thor a daughter and Hulk a son.
Yeah.
Dad, what's the dadification of culture, of media, right?
Like, it's, indeed,
all these guys are dads now, and they want the characters to be dads.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll keep an eye on it. So anyway, she gets the blood in her, and that causes her to Hulk out. She immediately runs off into the woods, and, you know, when she sort of wakes up, she's in...
Into the woods.
She's in that bar. And she comes back down. She has the meeting with those women that you talked about, and then
and is that all supposed to be in Mexico still? I guess
no, I don't think they're in Mexico at this point, are they? They go to Mexico after he takes her to Mexico because he knows.
But where are they at the beginning?
I think they're just hanging out in America.
Okay, yeah, okay.
You know, America.
America,
yeah. Iron Man 3 reference.
That was an Iron Man 3 reference.
Yeah, yeah.
America. He just says it in such a specific way.
But yeah, she has that scene with the women that you mentioned, and then she's waiting outside for someone to come and pick her up, and she hulks out voluntarily to get into a fight with some guys. I thought that was a cool fight.
It was not a fight. She just gets... There was no fight. She just gets... She gets apprehended by Bruce immediately. There's no fight. She doesn't strike.
She checks him around a bit.
Does she? Are you sure?
I mean, you've seen it twice, so maybe I'm wrong. But my memory
is... I swear to God, she hulks out. She turns to whack them. And Hulk just... Because also at that point, when you say she transforms by choice, at that point, you as the audience don't know that yet. So I think you're...
No, sure.
I actually think as the audience, you're supposed to think that she's about to do real...
I guess.
Like, be really harmful to him.
Yeah, I guess. I'd be interested to hear from people who hadn't, yeah, who weren't familiar with She-Hulk as to how that stuff worked for them. Because obviously as soon as she gets her powers, I'm like, well, it's She-Hulk, so she's going to be able to control them. But you're right, they do play it sort of like she doesn't, or no one realizes, including the audience, until later on.
I do like, though, that you like this episode so much that you've just imagined a fight that you enjoyed that never happened. You're like, hey, this was a really good fight. She throws around. No, it doesn't happen.
Maybe what I'm remembering is Hulk just sort of jumping in off screen.
Yes.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
So then that happens. Then she wakes up again.
She wakes up again in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we get a nice bit of backstory about the Hulk's lab.
Tony and Hulk, yeah.
Yeah. Got the initials carved into the bar, which I can tell you now, Tumblr was very pleased with.
It felt like that dynamic, which got so much play
in the original Avengers. Yeah,
in the original Avengers, that was such a core relationship. You know, almost helped to define the Mark Ruffalo Bruce Banner for that movie.
Yeah,
and they ignored it from then on.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is just an MCU thing that they like. Well, okay, that was a good idea, but we're going to do something different, you know, because we only make so many of these movies, so, and we only have so much time with any of these characters.
We don't have time to do Science Bros content for you.
Yes, but that was I did. You know, in a way, I don't want to harp on, but that relationship, I felt like Bruce's relationship with Tony had more specificity than his relationship with Jen. But anyway, I've said my piece on that. I won't harp on that.
And yeah, then we get this sequence again, which I loved, of Bruce and Jen investigating her powers, essentially, and him trying to convince her to learn how to control them, and explaining that, you know, her old life is over and she's going to be a superhero now, and her refusing to accept that and saying, like, no, I'm going to go back to the life I wanted to. You know, if you can't help me get rid of these powers, then help me control them. But I'm not going to join the Avengers and do what you do.
It was, there's the line early when she's like, just make me a harness that you were wearing, like, literally, like, 6 minutes ago. And he's like, oh, no, I can't. Which I, you know, again, I just, you know, I get what you have to do to get through that chunk of, you know, those beats of story. But I could, you know, felt like a first draft. Oh, it took too long. It's too hard. Okay, well, you know, actually, you've just done this to your cousin, whom you seem to have a very close relationship with. You've made a thing for yourself. We saw it working. So just you do that again. Then we, you know, you'd need a really decently script. What's the is it character script bullet? I can't. There's a line about like, or there's a writing term about stuff you can put into the script that makes sort of that justifies things that shouldn't be justifiable, or like, yeah, you know, and it wasn't enough of that. Script bullets or magic, but I can't remember. Anyway, that more of that, but they didn't do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I see. As when he said that, I was just like, yeah, sure. You know, he says he can't make one. He can't make one.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe it depends how much you're buying into the material already. Because the justification wasn't super specific, but if he says he can't do it, I sort of trust. Okay, fair.
Yeah.
Like
he's a trustworthy guy, though.
Yeah, right.
We do trust.
I tell you, the one bit that made me go, that was a bit weird, is when he said something like, oh, you know, your blood is different to mine slightly. Your DNA is different. I used it to heal my arm. I was like, what?
Yes.
What's that mean?
And also, why was his, like, because the Hulk, you know, the Hulk is a healing, has healing powers anyway. So why do you need that extra line to say you can heal your arm? Why was your arm hurt? Your arm was hurt from the crash.
From the Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay.
Because in all of his subsequent appearances, his arm has been messed up, right?
Fair enough.
But okay, I thought his arm was just getting better slowly, and like in every subsequent appearance, it was a little bit better.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they had to be like, oh yeah, now I used your blood to heal me. Like,
because of my cousin's magic blood, but not magic in a superhero way, magic in just a different science way has healed my magic blood that was magic. And now you have the magic blood and makes you a hot superhero. Right, fine.
If that comes back, fair enough. But I think, as it is, very weird thing to say.
Script armor. It's that, isn't
script
it?
Script armor, yeah. Well, right? No, yes. Plot armor.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
That's right. Anyway.
Okay, there we go. We got there.
We got there.
But yeah, what did you think of the sequences with them, you know, playing their powers off one another, you know, getting irritated, having the back and forth arguments about what she was going to do with her life. Because for me, I was just drinking it in. I thought, this is exactly my kind of nonsense.
I think most of those small pieces were played for a gag. And as discussed, you know, like the bit when he's doing calm yoga and then you cut to her and she's spinning around, like, okay, yeah, I mean, she's a more of a lithe Hulk. She's doing yoga better. Fine. Mm-hmm. The bit where they throw the rocks, you know, sure, okay.
This is the thing where I'm watching those sequences going, like, what I get from this is that Jen is inherently competitive. Like, she's not just a lawyer. Like, this is her life. This is how she is. Like, she wants to be better.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And it's true that I my housemate is someone who is in like year two of law school. And it is true that he is becoming, he's like more insufferable by the day in terms of his competitiveness. So I did, you know, actually, as you say that, I can relate to, I'm more the Bruce Banner, like, hey, just chill out. I'm cool. And my housemate is like, no, I'll be right. I'll win. And, maybe that's why I did like this as much.
Maybe that's why.
I like don't like that trait in people. although I love my housemate, to be clear.
Naturally. But yeah, I thought that was all good fun. Especially, like I say, Bruce Banner getting more and more annoyed with how Jen was. Just the fact that she wasn't taking his advice, which leads up to that big fight they have. And again, just I enjoyed it so much just watching two Hulk-powered characters like rag on each other. Towards the end, I was getting to the point of like, maybe you guys need to calm down because, you know, other people's stuff is getting smashed up now.
And I'll make another point, which is, I think maybe the absolute best sequence of heroes fighting each other in the whole of the MCU, it is from that first Avengers movie. It's that wonderful sequence. Well, to be honest, they're both really good. The Thor, Cap, Iron Man in the forest sequence is just wonderful. And then later the sort of the Hulk on the Triskelion is great. But I'll just talk about the first one, the jungle sequence. And that it just does that. It's so fun because it does that comics thing where the powers interacting with each other in fun ways. Mm-hmm. You know, the hammer on the shield at the end, the shield bouncing Iron Man's lasers back into Thor. All that stuff is so much fun. And I don't know, I know they both have the same power set, but it is like, I just always want more than I always want that the creativity of that Avengers fight when the heroes fight each other and this wasn't that.
I mean, again, the thing I look to is the first Incredible Hulk movie where he's fighting the Abomination and two CGI guys are, you know, weighing on each other and you just don't care. You're just like, whatever, the Hulk is going to win because he's the hero. I don't care what Tim Roth is doing. I don't care what, you know, Ed Norton is doing as the Hulk. Like, it was just nothing. Whereas this...
Yeah, this was better than that, but that's,
yeah.
Well, this like is the worst that this series has ever done.
Sure, but like, as comparable fights go, that's what I look to and go, well, they did better than that. You know, they gave me a Hulk fight where the character motivations made sense up to that point, and the fight that breaks out makes sense, and what happens in it makes sense. Like, I really enjoyed him doing the thunderclap on her and her being like, well, I can't do that, but I can come up with my own version, which is different but still effective. Like, it was good fun. It was character centric action, which is what I look for, and something that I think a lot of the MCU shows have missed out on.
Yeah, agree, you know, I agree, but I don't get a sense enough of who that character is for that to feel like character centric action. Because I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't know who the character is, so there's no action that can be centric to said.
Fair.
But it looked nice. At least it was in the day. It was like very bright.
It was in the day, and it was in a jungle. Yeah. It was not in a warehouse.
Yeah, you're not in a warehouse.
So where are we in the episode?
Then they break the bar, right?
They break the bar that he built, yeah.
And then we sort of skipped over the drinking scene, which was, because there's that bit, I really thought when he's going, oh, I've told you all of the bad things about being the Hulk and here are some good things, we were going to get some of that sort of, you know, they're soaring through the air, you know, because they've done a big jump, or they're in some place that no other person could get to. But actually, it's a gag, and the gag is they can drink a lot. But it didn't land like a joke for me, you know. I think that could have been a joke, and in fact, it just felt like a thing. You know, that, and I've made this point already, so again, I won't harp on, but so much in this episode felt, there are bits so much felt like they should be jokes, whereas they just felt like things. But what was I going to say? I was going to say that then they rebuild the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then she leaves, right? She kind of leaves amicably.
Yeah. With a nice cousinly hug at the end.
Yeah, although there was definitely a moment where the bit where it is actress Tatiana Maslany talking to CJ Hulk, and I swear her eyeline is just completely not. She isn't looking at his face. The first chunk of that sequence, she's just looking out to space, but talking to him. 100%. They didn't put the tennis ball on the stick at the right angle. and then we just cut
back to the
courtroom.
Yeah.
And she's taking down some guy for something. We've heard that speech at the beginning. And then we're hearing the opposite lawyer to her, you know, make this case.
The technical term.
The opposite lawyer to her.
The opposite lawyer to her,
The defense attorney, probably, right?
Yeah, yeah. And she's prosecuting, she's defending, yeah.
Right. And then she gets up, or I think, first of all, her Ginger Gonzaga says, like, you know, is positive, and then the guy that is sitting with him goes, "You better not screw this up, Walters." And then she stands up and starts. I think, what's the line? It's like, "I'd like to make my closing argument," and then smash through the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Jamila Jamil as
Titania, yeah,
Titania, not named in this episode, but that's who we know she's playing.
Yep,
and she's then doing some havoc, sort of just off angle. And then we get the scene we described earlier, where she then hulks out for the first time. I guess we get just before this scene, we get her talking back to camera and saying, "And that was how I got my powers. And since then, no hulking, and my family, no, and I think she says my best friend knows. That's how we know that. But you know, I'm just gonna be a lawyer now. And then she hulks out and she kicks Titania with like one punch. Knocks her out. And then the final shot is her humaning back up and is about to step into her work shoes. Yeah. And then we get, who's that girl? And then the other thing we get, which I hadn't watched, the first time I watched it, I didn't really process, was, and again, I'm going to drag the episode a bit here, the animation and the little sort of, the imagery in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt sells the show better than the episode does, actually.
I mean, those were some top-tier credit. It was some top-tier credits work, I can say that for sure. Like, I was watching that credit sequence going, like, I want to read this comic. That looks great.
Right. Or like, I think what I was thinking was, I wished I'd just watched this TV show.
For me, it was that TV show, more or less. Like, you know, the thing where they had the little chart about her, you know, sort of PowerPoint presentation as to whether Steve Rogers was a virgin or not. Like,
yeah.
Her, there was a really good image of her in her lawyer gear in the lift. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But that, like that, no, because...
Well, that's coming, though.
That's the show.
That's the coming, though, right?
She's like, I want to be a lawyer, but yes, I've got these powers and I'm happy to use these powers, but like everyone's looking at me and that's not my vibe, and that balance, right? That is a show I'm looking forward to, and you know, this episode just isn't that.
Yeah, well, this is why I think it would have been, like, so many of these Marvel shows, you know, you don't really get into what the premise is, or you have the premise set up and then suddenly three episodes later they've, you know, fucked off to Egypt or whatever and completely abandoned any semblance of what was actually going on in the pilot. Like, I think as a sitcom especially, it would have benefited from, here is the origin story, here are all the characters, here is the main character, and then here is what it's going to be like week to week. Like, if ever they were going to do a drop two episodes at the start, this should have been it. And I know from reading the sort of advanced press that episode two is much more what the rest of the show is like.
Mm. This in some ways feels like it should have been the second episode. You know, like, you could see a really fun episode one where she is She-Hulk and she's, you know, she's dealing with the stuff, you know, and then you go back and you get the Mark Ruffalo episode as the follow-up.
Well, the thing is, I can see why they've done it the way they've done it, which is that they've
because
gone,
you get Ruffalo and you get Hulk, right?
Here is Ruffalo and Hulk. These are people you already like. Stick with it. If you don't love Maslany by the end of it, maybe you're not going to, but, you know, I can see what you're saying, but I can also absolutely see why they went the way they did.
And I don't know about you. I mean, just watching TV and being out and about in London, and I just feel like this show in particular is really, it feels like it's everywhere. It's like advertised so heavily.
Maybe it feels to me like it's everywhere because I haven't shut up about She-Hulk for months.
I just think they're pushing this one hard. And also, you know, I think it's lightness and its shortness and the Hulk of it, you know, like it's, you know,
it's got a lot of selling points. Yeah.
It has got selling points.
And just the fact that it is a sitcom, or at least it purports to be a sitcom.
We'll see.
Well, when I think of Hawkeye and Moon Knight and Falcon and Winter Soldier, and just the sort of self-important dullness that most of those shows had for huge stretches, like there's not a second of She-Hulk which is taking itself seriously, and personally that's what I like.
Yeah, but I think that has to be replaced with something, and if that's if it's a funny show with jokes, with good jokes, then bring it on. If that's what you're replacing, I love comedy. I love it. I love comedy. If you give me a good comedy, I watch it. I love it. It's just if you replace it with things instead of jokes, and then you have nothing, and then, you know, there's nothing to your show. There's nothing there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my counterpoint to that is, how many sitcoms do you know where the first episode like really comes out strong? Like most of the time, sitcoms involve you sitting through some sort of weak setups while you get to learn the characters, and then, you know, a few episodes in, it really comes together.
Very fair. You know, the whole first season of Parks and Rec is terrible. For instance, right? Most pilots, especially American comedy pilots, are it's a premise pilot, and you've got a lot of like plot work to do to set up your sitcom machinery. But having said that, I just doubt that this is going to be a full sitcom. I think it might be lighter than the other MCU shows, but, you know, is this going to be Seinfeld? Is this going to be Abbott Elementary? Is it going to have that tone? Is it going to have that level of jokes? Is it going to even be Rick and Morty? Because Jessica Gao, who's the showrunner on this, or the head writer, the creator, she wrote the. I don't know if you're a Rick and Morty guy. I mean, I'm not.
I am a big Rick and Morty guy. I keep it under wraps because, you know, because of obvious reasons.
Because of reasons, yeah. I think I watched the first couple of seasons, so, you know, and enjoyed it a lot. But then, you know, whatever TV happens. But she wrote the Pickle Rick episode, which is a fairly pivotal episode, or, you know, that's an important episode to that show. And I remember thinking that was a funny episode of TV, the Pickle Rick thing. But Rick and Morty's also. It's a comedy, you know, it has lots of jokes, fast jokes, quick jokes, you know, profane jokes. That's what that show is. The She-Hulk isn't going to be profane, but is it going to be funny? Is it going to be funny? And I didn't find this episode funny. And so if it's a sitcom, it needs to be funny for me.
Yeah. Again, as I've said, I did find it funny. I admit I'm not entirely convinced that going into episode two, they can reach that level of comedy again, because so much of what I enjoyed was the interaction between her and Mark Ruffalo. Mm. And, you know, I assume Mark Ruffalo is not going to be in it a lot. I assume he'll be in it again, probably in the final episode, but yeah, I'm not expecting to see him in episode two, which makes me think, well, in that case, where is the comedy going to come from? And you have to assume they're going to set up the supporting cast better. But yeah, that makes me nervous. And I think I've said to some people, I don't think I've said it, you know, publicly to anyone, but when I've been talking about the show, one of the things I've said is, if all the episodes are worse than this one, I'll be happy that this one was sort of exactly what I wanted and great and just did the character justice. And if future episodes are worse, I'll deal with that when it happens. I can't say for sure that they won't be, but I'm glad of this one. And that's how I've been approaching it.
If all the episodes are worse than this, then that'll be an issue for me.
Is there anything else we want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Is Captain America virgin?
I feel like they cleared that up.
I thought that was a really funny way to like both make a joke about a major existing character, but also by the end of the episode, like properly sort of debunk it.
Yeah.
And actually make a joke of the fact that the whole time she was trying to get Bruce to tell her that Captain America isn't a virgin because Captain America fucks. That was funny. But also like a reminder that, you know, probably the MCU can deflate its own characters to a degree, but not that far, you know? If Feige's like, we can make a joke about Captain America being a virgin, but we have to then confirm to the audience that he 100% isn't a virgin. Like, they would have had that conversation in a writer's room, which I think is kind of funny.
He's like, we don't want people calling him a virgin.
No, it's we can. Bad for I know the that brand. There's that comment online that we enjoy that. That's funny. Let's address it and have fun with it. But be conclusive.
Yeah.
Incorrect. Internet. Incorrect.
I mean, I thought back to the scenes in Winter Soldier where Nat's like, have you never kissed anyone? And he's like, I've kissed people. Yeah. You know, it's something that follows him around.
Yeah, he's got a virginal energy.
I mean, this is something actually, the last point I want to make is that this is something that I know is close to Joe's heart, which is that the MCU is so sanitized of all sexual energy. And Joe is very clear in thinking that, you know, that aspect of people's psyche and their lives should not be de-emphasized to the degree that it is within specifically Disney blockbusters. And Jessica Gowers talked during the promo thing about how this show is going to be sex positive and will involve, you know, that part of her life. And I think that is broadly a good thing.
Yes, but not to be the final naysayer of the episode. But remember, have you seen that clip where Taika and all of the Thor Love and Thunder crew on stage, and like someone asked a question in the audience, being like, "Is the movie gay?" And then Taika's like, "Yes, the movie's very gay." And then it was like, "Woo, yeah, woo!" This is before the film has come out, and. It's you know, this marketing bullshit, right? That's not in the movie. And so is Jessica Gao just another one of those, oh yeah, no, this is MCU thing, is going to have all the fucking in it and going to be so different to the others. You know, really going to really deal with sexuality. I don't have the benefit of the doubt for these guys anymore on that. I think they say that and the content is as PG, not even PG-13, as PG as it has come before.
Yeah, but I mean, prove
me wrong, Chief. Prove
my,
me wrong.
My only counterpoint to that at this stage is there's that scene in the trailer where she carries a guy into her room and then gets on top of him. That already makes it hornier than 90% of the MCU's output.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah. So we'll see. I agree. We don't want to give them too much of the benefit of the doubt at this point. But I'm hopeful.
Although we did the only sexual reference in this episode is, well, I'll remind you, is, I think, well, no, that's probably a bit reductive. But when Jen goes, I thought the only point of yoga was to give me a good butt up top. And Bruce is like, no, Jen, I'm your cousin. Like, that seems pretty friggin' small C conservative to me, you know? Oh, you're my cousin. You can't even be talking about your own butt. But so we'll see.
Maybe. I mean, I think the whole Captain America has Captain America ever had sex thing is fairly, you know.
Although, you know, that it's buried in the post credits. It's buried in the credits. Well,
the conclusion and the post credits, but the conversation is embedded throughout the episode.
I know, but having watched it for the second time, a kid could watch the episode and not the post credits. And totally not pick up on that in any way. It's
sure, it is subtle.
It's pretty subtle.
I mean, I'm not expecting them to go, you know, R-rated with it. I'm not expecting to see like naked green breasts or anything. But
no, but it's another one of those, like, they're sort of pontificating towards making, you know, talking about anything sexual, but, you know, actually really burying it at the end. It's all bark and no bite. Because they can't bite, because this stuff is for kids, or it needs to be for everybody. So it will continue to mostly bark until Deadpool 3 comes out. That'll be the moment. That'll be the moment.
Well, another fourth wall breaking character.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we should wrap it up there because we've had a solid hour of chat about 28 minutes of TV or something.
I didn't think I had anything to say about She-Hulk episode one. We have spoken. Earlier I was like, well, you know, we might have time for Sandman because I've got lots of Sandman thoughts and very little She-Hulk thoughts.
Yeah, we'll have to wait until tomorrow to hear the Sandman thoughts.
How long is the fucking Sandman episode going to be, man?
I've already given my basic opinion on Sandman, so, you know, we'll just talk specifics.
Yes. And of course, listeners, you'll also hear very shortly, I did go to see DC's League of Super Pets, and I did record a podcast episode about it. And so we're going to put them out soon, all three of these, right? Sandman and this and Pets. And so, yeah, enjoy that, I guess. You know, sure.
I know, I'm going to look forward to it.
Actually, the movie's good. I should say, the podcast, I'm not sure about the podcast. The movie's good. I'll say that. The movie's good and actually probably 10 times as many laughs as was in this episode of She-Hulk. That's final drag. Final drag of the podcast episode. Super Pets way funnier than She-Hulk. There we go. There's my poor part.
Fair enough. You heard it here first. I'm not sure it's correct, but you definitely heard it. Okay, so we'll be back soon with that. We'll be back soon with Sandman. We'll probably be doing She-Hulk episode 2 as well.
And to tweet at, you know, if you've seen She-Hulk and you are, you know, Team James,
yeah.
Team Reese.
Hashtag Team James us, or right? Team Reese, yeah.
Hashtag Team Reese. I'm at Reese, which is R-H-Y-S. That's my Twitter handle.
Yeah.
Let me know what you think.
I'm at James Hunt. That's my name.
And if you agree with each of us individually, you just tweet at us. If you have this magical third opinion, tweet at the both of us and give that. And we'll... We'd love to read some of that stuff out on the next episode.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, let's do that. All right, sounds good. We'll be back next week, and also in a few days,
and also maybe the day after that. Lots of content. This is what the subs for, you know.
That's what it's for. Yeah. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.